Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show on a very sad day, not just in the world of chefs, but I would say in the world.
Yeah, definitely in the world.
The world was rocked today by the death and apparent suicide of Anthony Bourdain at age 61. Everyone who's hearing this, I'm sure, has already heard the news. I mean, I never saw news travel like this. I am sitting here in the kitchen of Oceana Restaurant, and I am with Chef Bill Telepan. Hi, Bill.
How you doing?
Bill and I happen to have plans to see each other today. We were both pretty broken up about this awful news, and I thought we would just share some thoughts about Tony. We both knew him a little bit, not extremely well. We both had memories of him.
Sure.
I thought we could speak a little to his place in the industry, and I thought for a show whose listenership is mostly cooks and people in the business, maybe there'd be some value to people hearing us share that, and it would be sort of a communal thing.
Yeah.
So this is a rough show. There, you will have noticed there was no opening montage or music. There's not going to be any closing music. I have an engineer standing by to post it, and we just wanted to share with you guys. So first of all, I don't really know where to start. I guess I will start with Kitchen Confidential.
That's his kind of start.
That was his calling card. That was his big break.
What's funny is that before he was writing books. He actually, I think, wrote a mystery before that.
He wrote some novels.
And he, while he was a chef.
Yeah.
And he actually was the chef at 1/5, Andrew, after it closed from when Alfred Portale owned it. And then he continued on as 1/5 somehow.
Yeah.
With new owners. Maybe they sold it. And he was the chef there.
Yeah, he knocked around New York. I mean, he was this knock-around chef. He cooked for Pino Luongo at Coco Teatro, a restaurant that's not remembered. Well, Leal, I think people do remember.
Know him for that.
Yeah. But then Kitchen Confidential came out like a thunderbolt. I remember him saying to me once.
Well, there was that New Yorker article that he wrote, and that was the one about, like, you know, don't eat fish on Mondays.
Yeah.
And all the chefs were like, oh, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
I was one of them.
Right, right.
I actually told you this morning, I didn't want to mention that because I do work in a fish restaurant, but it's not true. It's all good. We get good quality fish.
Right, but that still comes up.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know.
Almost 20 years later.
20 years later. And people at that time when it did come out was everybody knew my job.
Yes.
Or they thought
Which
they
was
did.
New.
Right. Right, yeah. It was kind of new. The Food Network was kind of newish.
Yeah.
Was it? I don't know, but I know it wasn't as popular.
It was about 6 years in, maybe, 7 years in.
But, you know, people just knew our work now. You
well,
know,
he took people into the kitchen.
Yes.
And before that, I feel like, with very few exceptions, one of them would be Marco Pierre White's book, White Heat, which I know Tony was a huge fan of.
It was a great book. You know, when I'm out and not feeling it for this, like any love about my work, I read the Marco Pierre White
book. Do you really?
It's so fucking inspiring. I swear to God, and none of the recipes. You just read the text, just like some of the shit he says about, like, you know, just, you know, you being in the industry and like how hard, it's amazing.
It's amazing.
I try to give it to my cooks to just read when I feel like they're ready to become in this.
I feel like that was very much a precursor to Kitchen Confidential. I once asked Tony about that, and he wanted to do in words, I think, what that book, which had some words, but mostly it was visual, did in visuals, right? Which was take people, you know, usually when you saw chefs, it was this idealized, sanitized version of chefs. It was chefs, you know, cooking with Martha Stewart in this beautiful kitchen on television or in a fake kitchen. Fake home kitchen on the Food Network.
Right.
And he brought everyone into the real kitchen. And I don't mean just in a, in any kind of, you know, lascivious way. But he really demonstrated the brutality of the work, of the life, and also the highs of the life.
Well, the thing about it, too, that was really kind of, like, amazing, that how he captured, is that when, you know, I think about the restaurant I cooked in before I went to cooking school, right?
Yeah.
And it was just some random Jersey restaurant. Well, there was a lot of random restaurants around the world. You heard about a few of that were, like, amazing, like the top 1%. But there was still 99% of these restaurants where, you know, it was kind of like those seashore restaurants he worked in. You worked your ass off many hours. There was drugs going on. There was sex going. It was crazy, right? That no one really knew about. You know,
yeah. And if they knew about it, you didn't talk about it.
You weren't talking about that on Martha Stewart or on the Food Network or anything like that.
Yes.
So, that's kind of like
so
what he
for better
brought.
And for worse. Yes, he, for better and for he worse. Brought all that out. I think a lot of people were very attracted to that.
So do you do a lot of drugs, Bill?
No, but if we're yeah. honest, I think a lot of people found that, you know, what he called the, you know, the guys who came in dressed like pirates to one of the, I think it was in a Provincetown restaurant in Kitchen Confidential. Yeah. Anyway, for me, you know, I'm someone who writes almost exclusively about chefs at this point. And I've said for years, I feel like I'm one of these people who he made my, basically my life possible. Yeah. My professional life, which has bled into my social life. I feel like he created the interest in that. I think he created the interest that allowed someone like Gabrielle Hamilton to write her book. I think all of these things now that focus on the chef, I feel like in this country anyway,
yeah,
very much started with Kitchen Confidential.
Well, it's also there. It's like people are more interested, not just as chefs, but other things that we do. They are interested about our lives. Yes. It seems like what we do outside of work. Or,
yeah.
But like you said, I think before it was mostly like this is what they do in the kitchen. It was like. I think about, like, you know, maybe there was articles about Gilbert Lacoz when they opened Le Bernardin after a while. I'm just trying to think of, like, people back in the 80s
yeah.
who may have been written about. Wolfgang Puck was just
I mean, they got written about.
But, yeah, but it was not you're right. I mean, like, that where chefs have a voice, you know what
yes.
I mean? Like, even to this day when, you know, even the advocacy work, because Tony was very... He was a very good person toward, you know, with advocacy for human rights, you know, the immigrant worker, for things just being done properly in the world, you know, and people having having a just society. And I think people now listen to. I mean, I even have gone to Congress several times to sort of advocate for children nutrition or the hungry and the poor. And it's like, you know, it's sort of like he's like one of these guys that made that possible for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. Paul Bocuse, who Tony revered, right, was known for coming out of the kitchen.
Right.
And, you know, I never said this to him, which I now regret. But, you know, in my head, when he said that to me once, it clicked that, you know, he kind of did the opposite, right? He brought the customers or the public the other direction into the kitchen, right?
Yeah.
That kind of completed the circle
in
a way.
It did, definitely.
It really did and helped close that gap. And I think for cooks who, you know, people forget at this point in history where we are now because we all know, everyone knows so much about it.
Right.
But there was a time where that was like, you know, that was the, what's it called? The back of the house, right? It's like there was an old television story, series, miniseries, Upstairs, Downstairs.
Right.
And it was the servile community and the privileged community.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what the back of the house was. And I think the way he wrote about it, humanized it, portrayed it, you know, he almost reminded me a little bit of Will Hunting in that movie Good Will Hunting.
Right.
Because... I've always said this, the two longest lines I've ever seen at the Culinary Institute for people to get things signed were for Thomas Keller and Tony Bourdain.
Right.
You couldn't have two more different people.
Right, exactly.
And Keller, to me, epitomized the sort of regal, you know, almost papal, you know, figure.
Right.
And Tony was the absolute epitome of sort of the kitchen grunt.
Yeah.
But gifted with this ability to describe that life in a way no one ever had.
Right.
So no, even someone who was like a student at the CIA on scholarship, no money, you know, eating ramen noodles three nights a week, you know, or three meals a day or whatever, could relate to him.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's what I think he did. He was able to sort of humanize it in a way or make it accessible in words that everybody understood it. You know, Like, I joke around, like, customers would come in. But, you know, I had family members who, you know, when I wanted to become a cook, didn't really understand, like, why I wanted to become a cook. This was back in 85. Because it wasn't – but now it's like, you know, if you want to be a cook, people think, like, oh, it's a great thing.
Yes.
You know? And – but, you know, but there was people, like, in my family who just didn't understand it, but who now understand it, who, you know, at that point when Kitchen Confidential was coming out, understood it. He really – like he was able to describe it to people that weren't just like the customers here at Oceana who right. had the who had the expense account, but
yeah.
just like you said, the guy whose family is working, you know, the guy who's working, you know, salads for me,
yeah.
his family would read a book like that and understand it. So
right.
you know, it's amazing how many people he reached.
Oh my God. And that was just that book, that which I book. Didn't know this. He once told me that within like 6 months or something, the book was translated into 20 some languages.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's how fast it went around the world.
Well, because there's cooks around the world.
But no, but here's the thing. As many people as read that book, right, then there's all the television, right? So he does. We're not, by the way, we're not going to do a full-on recounting of his life. There's going to be a million obituaries and remembrances. You don't need us for that. We're just here sharing how he hit us.
Right.
But, you know, there was obviously all the television, most recently the stuff on CNN.
Yeah, right, right. Which was amazing that, like, he got a gig on CNN.
Right.
Like prime time.
Not cooking. Yes. Well,
bringing cooking to or food around, well, like to make people understand so and expose people.
Here's an incredible part of today. All right. And I want to talk about the reaction because you and I, when I called you and asked if you, we already had plans to see each other today. And I said, would you do this with me? But we both shared that we had a surprisingly intense reaction to this news, given that we didn't know him all that well.
Right.
But the Instagram phenomenon today.
Oh, yeah.
It has been, it is like, for a guy who came up as just a journeyman cook in New York City, it is like when David Bowie died, when Prince died.
Yeah, yeah.
It is this outpouring. I mean, it is just nothing but Tony Bourdain pictures on Instagram today. And what's amazing, to your point a second ago, and I think this speaks to the David Bowie comparison, right? Because Bowie crossed over. You know, he was a musician who acted, who... was part of the fashion scene, who, right? And Tony was a chef, a writer, a television personality.
Right.
Half a human, almost a humanitarian by the end of it. And each person's, the one people who actually wrote things, each person experienced him in different realms, right? So there's all these people who said, this was the first chef I'd ever heard of. This made me want to be a cook. This, I was a cook who wanted to write. This made me realize you could make that transition.
Right.
Then there's all these people talking about his television show and saying that it's barely about food, that it's about bringing people together.
Right.
It's about humanizing.
There's something an astronaut like said. You know, somebody, watched,
an astronaut
I,
saying
I,
he watched you know, it from space. He felt closer to Earth.
Right. I mean, that's amazing.
Have you ever? It's killing me. It's really killing me.
No.
Okay, so let's briefly talk. Tell me where you were when you heard this news this
morning.
Well,
I was home in the morning, and my sous chef texted me and said that, you know, and this is right after Kate Spade, you know, which was another big shock when you hear about this person who's successful and like, you know, he just texted me that in an article from CNN that he died, and I just kind of was just like, holy shit!
Did you
like,
think it couldn't have been right?
I'm thinking here's like who this guy. He every time I've seen him seemed just so happy, and every time you know just seemed in a great place.
Yeah.
And you know, and then you think about his life, and you know, I was just talking to my general manager about it. It's just like, you know, or my wife even said here's a guy who had this joie de vivre.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you know, and you would he'd be the furthest person you would think would you know make you know kill himself, and it's just I was just like I'm like. How? Like, why?
Yeah.
And what was going on? And suicide for me is just the it tears me apart.
It
right?
does.
And it's about like it's, you can imagine what that person is going through to actually do. And you know, like you kill yourself with a gun. It's but to hang yourself to actually set up the contraption and do it. Where I mean,
I know it's awful
my gosh,
to even
it's
contemplate
awful.
It.
And
I want to say, as I will before we're done, at least one more time. If you are out there. And you know, I've had this talk with some people about kitchens, right? Kitchens are still, to this day, despite all the evolution that's gone on,
right.
They're tough places. People don't want to be seen as weak. I think they are not the easiest place to admit a mental health problem.
Right.
Admit, you know, if you are out there, if you are at the end of your rope, if you are contemplating suicide, if you need to talk to people, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 800-273-8255. Stop listening to the show right now and call them.
Right.
There are volunteers there who want to help you.
And everybody,
or you can text HOME, H-O-M-E, to the crisis text line, which I never heard of before today.
I never heard of either.
And that is 741-741. Stop the show right now. Go do that.
Yeah.
There are people. It is not as bad as you think it is. People are there to help.
And I want all that are Instagramming or posting on Facebook or Twitter
to include that information.
To include that information. Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of like, you know, what hit. I mean, listen, the shock of someone like him killing themselves, but it's just the shock of somebody killing themselves.
Yeah.
Anytime you hear about that,
yeah,
it's horrible. And but, you know, yeah, and here's this guy we all thought was living the dream and
yeah,
carefree. He was here at the beginning of the year for dinner, and I went out to see him, and he was got a Jack
always.
And Coke, and his new girlfriend was hanging out, and
yeah,
he was there with another couple, and when I said goodbye to him, they were in a really happy place, and I, you know, and that's kind of like my last connection to
well,
him.
It's funny because
seeing here
yeah,
for dinner.
Well,
and,
everyone's yeah, been saying, you know, about of Kate Spade, you never know, right?
Right.
But even knowing that, I've had suicide in my life, right?
Right.
Even knowing that, because I have never had more calls or emails today, even when family members have died, than
right,
I got today. And it was great. Everyone just wanted to talk. Everyone wanted to talk.
Right, right.
And it was mostly people in my industry, writers or yours, chefs.
Right.
But it was also what I call civilians, people who were saying, did people know this was coming? And I was like, guys, when I tell you that the last person on planet Earth that any of us would have expected, it was him.
Right. Yeah.
You know? So
yeah. No, that's the
it
that's
just goes
kicker,
to show you. So I was sitting around, I was just, you know, watching the French Open semifinal. It was early today. It was like whatever time it was. And all of a sudden I got a text from my next door neighbor and then another neighbor and then my wife within 60 seconds. And then my phone rang and it was someone else. And then it just kept going.
Yeah.
It just kept going.
Right.
You know, I just wanted to share one or two stories because I feel like most people listening probably didn't have an opportunity to meet him. One of the things to me about him that was really remarkable is, you know, he was incredibly famous. He was seen as this, like, the coolest guy, right? Like,
right,
he was kind of the coolest.
Right.
And yet, my experience of him, and I want to be very clear about this, this is not someone I hung out with. You could probably count the times I met him on two hands.
Right.
But some of those were extended interactions, you know, talks and dinners and stuff like that. And I feel pretty geeky in any situation. Next to him, I don't even know what I would compare it to. But he, in person to me, I think was so much nicer than the average person would expect of someone who had that swagger that he had.
Yeah.
And I think he treated not just other cooks and not just other well-known cooks. I mean, not just other chefs or other well-known chefs. But anytime I ever saw him interact with a cook, like a line cook,
a
culinary student,
yeah,
he was so gracious.
Yeah.
He treated them like an equal. And the word I use is colleague.
Right.
I think he treated writers and cooks like colleagues.
Yeah, no, I mean, I sensed, you know, he was always the champion for the cook and always the
yes,
champion for, you know, the immigrant cook. And so,
yes,
yeah, I mean, he connected to him. And, you know, because he was one of them, I felt like, in a way, like, you feel that. I mean, I do, too. It's like, you know, you feel, like, connected to the cook because you were one, you
yes,
know? And you understand what they're going through. And I think since he really, and like you said before, he was able to capture it. You know, he was able to, like, put it into words. And, like, none of us...
Yeah, he was
know,
in it
like,
and outside. He was in it and outside of it at the
it,
same
exactly,
time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that a lot, too, you know, with him and other cooks.
I just found it extraordinary. And for me personally, for, again, someone he barely knew... I started a blog years ago, and I'm not even going to say the name, lest it seems like I'm plugging it, which I'm not. But when I started it, I would get these alerts, you know, on Twitter, when Twitter was the thing,
right?
It was only 6 years ago. Tony Bourdain has retweeted your whatever. Tony Bourdain has mentioned you
right,
in a tweet.
Right.
He was tweeting out my articles.
Right.
I hadn't sent them to him.
Right.
He was hooking me up.
He was probably reading them and enjoying them.
He was hooking me up, but
yeah,
he knew... I think he knew when you have like millions of followers,
right,
he knew his power.
Right.
And I think he wore that mantle with incredible generosity.
Yeah.
You know, I was very selective if I ever went to him for an interview or something. But he never declined. And he was amazing. My favorite story, which to me just says so much, is I really wanted to interview him for my blog. And I waited till the blog had been around for a few years. And I sent him a note and said, hey, you've been really supportive and it's great. I want to interview you. And like 15 minutes later, sure, no problem. Probably going to have to be later rather than sooner because he's all over the world.
Right.
Copies, Lori Wolliver. Lori, if you're listening, my condolences, his longtime aide-de-camp. And Lori gets to me. We set up a date. And about 4 or 5 days before the appointment, I can't remember if it was a phone call or an email from Lori. And I thought, oh, here we go. This is the cancellation because I just assumed. And Lori says to me or emails me, I can't remember, Tony needs to see the movie Chef, that Jon Favreau movie. And they've sent over a screening copy for him. He's privately screening it at 00 Productions in one of the screening rooms. He thought you might like to join him.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
And then you two can have lunch after that. So I go over there, and it was me, Tony, and Helen Cho, who does their social media. Right. That was it. No, he knows what that meant to me.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
That's really
he
nice.
He didn't need to do that.
No.
And then we went to lunch. We sit down to do this interview. At that point, it was probably 1:32 in the afternoon. I said, how much time do we have? And he says, I have no other appointments for the rest of the day. I'm here as long as you want me. That's unbelievable. And anybody who listens to this who does interviews, that's unbelievable with people several rungs down on the fame and power ladder.
Yeah, I'm kicking than
him.
You out at 3:30. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I got half an hour. I can't say who. I did an interview for this podcast recently, and I got to the end, and I was saying, okay, well, then, and as I was saying it, the person I was interviewing was literally getting up out of their chair as they were saying, if you listen closely, you could tell who it is because their voice tails off. Literally. And he's like, all the time in the world. And then in the interview gave me three pieces of news. He let me break the news. He was doing a Jeremiah Tower documentary.
Right.
He mentioned he was going to do a Get Jiro sequel. And he gave me the Shep Gordon memoir that he was going to publish.
Oh, my gosh.
And he knew. Normally, that goes to Eater, the New York Times.
Yeah.
He knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
That is...
That's huge.
And again, he's not someone... I was never a cook.
Right.
I never cooked with him.
Right.
I didn't help him, get his big break as a writer. He was just helping somebody out. That's my experience of Tony Bourdain. Yeah. I mean, this is why I was almost in tears today.
Yeah, I know. I think my most extended one with him was when they did the Alan Ritchman roast at La Bernardin.
Now, so for people who don't know, Alan Ritchman and Tony had gotten into some kind of a feud. Ritchman said to me once, never get into a feud with Bourdain. You cannot beat Bourdain. The French Open's going on today. It's like playing Nadal on clay. You cannot win a feud with Tony Bourdain. Go ahead.
No.
But they made up. And I think Tony was very nice saying that, Alan had been in the military.
He said, I don't remember everything that was said.
Yeah. But
I just remember laughing so hard and just being hysterical. And then going outside for a smoke. And he came by, we hung out, and we just bullshitted. And it was just kind of an easy conversation. Just kind of like you said, like, here's this guy who's like,
World famous, recognized in hotel lobbies in the middle of nowhere.
Just hanging out, smoking, just like a regular person. So, and every experience I've had with him, it's always been like that.
Yeah.
And like, I never had a real connection to him in any way. But it was always like, he knew who you were. He always said hello.
Yeah.
He said, he was always never... I hadn't seen him for a few years, and when he came in here at the beginning of the year, I was like, oh, should I go out? Well, and I just said, let me go out. And he introduced me to his friends. He was just super nice. So, good. He's good soul.
Have you heard, in the kitchen? Did it hit people?
Yeah, it hit. I mean, we all sort of, in the beginning, a couple of my, my sous chef and the managing partner here were on the trail, and we were all just surprised. I mean, everybody's just dumbfounded by it. And it's about, and again, I think it goes back to how could this happen? This guy who seemed on top of the world, living a life we all want to live or like to live at some point. But the GM here said, we see it as that, but was he lonely? He traveled so much. Can that really wear someone down?
Yeah. None of us know.
You never know
what's going on with somebody.
So,
but what I was going to say is I think the thing is, and again, this is not years ago, maybe you would have said it was, but it was not limited to cooks. I think this was someone who was so, whatever else was going on, so sure of who he was,
right,
that you felt like everyone felt like they knew him.
Right.
Everyone felt like they knew him. This is why I compare it to like when we lost Bowie, or when we lost, you know, well, like this connection. You felt a connection to this guy. You felt like he was giving you all of himself, that he was willing to stand up for other people.
Well, that,
and that made you feel very much a part of him.
I think the way he would sort of stick up for people,
yeah,
or voice his opinion in a way that for the right of people, I
yeah
think that was his biggest I think that's where he'll, you know, he'll be remembered for all his TV shows and all that, but I think like him, the good he has done, I think is as important as any.
Because he was willing to take a stand.
He was willing to take a stand, yeah, and stand up for people and,
yeah,
and for what's right, and that I appreciate a lot.
Yeah, well, it's rarer and rarer. We talked about Instagram a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
And we're at a time right now where nobody sticks their neck out for anything. People are so afraid. They're so afraid of being of a misstep. They're so afraid of something going viral.
Well,
and he had but he also, as Alan Richman said, he was so smart,
yeah,
and so quick. There were times, I talked earlier today,
right,
I didn't agree with everything he ever said.
Right.
There were times where I would, and I don't want to delineate it now, it's not the time, but there were times where I'd see him shift position on something and go, know, or whatever. But I was never, ever, ever, ever in a million years going to get into it with him.
No, but you
because
also,
you were going to lose.
Well, because you also knew that it was quickly, I mean, he had this, I guess, this mind like this, where it was quickly well thought out,
yes,
what he was going to say,
yes,
and be able to write it well. Like,
yeah,
sometimes you want to say something, like, I want to put something out on social media, but I'm like, am I saying this right? I don't,
yes,
want it to sound, you know. And so I think for him, it was it came so easily, you know. And that was his gift.
Was his gift. And also, as you said, like, I cannot imagine, you know, with my measly number of followers, should I tweet this?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is someone going to misconstrue this?
Right.
He has like millions of people, and he's like firing, getting into these war of words, you know, from the road.
It's like Trump.
But doing it brilliantly.
More brilliantly than Trump, thankfully.
Yes, 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 yes.
So, anyway,
we're very sad.
Sad day.
We wanted to take a few minutes and talk about Tony. I hope for people who listened, it was, I don't even know what the word, useful. Chance to commiserate a little by extension. I may at a future date try to get some people who did know Tony very well together. But I selfishly, I must say, wanted to talk this through with somebody. So, Bill, thanks for doing that.
For those of
you out there, thanks for listening.
It's good to talk about it.
I feel this loss very profoundly.
Yeah.
You know, I said to someone earlier this morning, unfortunately, Caitlin, my wife and I, have lost a disproportionate number of people over the last 6 years. I don't want to say we've gotten used to losing people or take it in stride. That sounds horrible and callous.
Right.
But we're rarely rocked by something, even if it's somebody unexpected and maybe even somebody we knew personally. This really floored me today.
Yeah.
I was surprised at this slow, swelling upset that took me over this morning.
Yeah.
You know, and lasted for hours. I mean, I was in a fog today.
Yeah. No, it was weird. Like, for me, too, in a way, it's like, I have to come into work. I have a lot sort of things I have to get done this week, and
like,
trying to focus on that. But then it would always be, there'd be something that would bring it back.
Yeah.
And I think just because it's so shocking and you know, like I said, here's this guy who just seemed so, you know, who was happy.
Yeah.
Mm.
So
anyway,
with that, once again, I want to give out this number. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 800-273-8255. From a landline, of course, that would be 1-800-273-8255. Or you can text HOME, H-O-M-E, to the crisis text line, 741-741. I want to extend my condolences and commiserations to people who did know Tony, his family, his friends, his colleagues, his professional family at 0.0.
Poor Eric, right?
Eric Repair especially. Your old restaurant was right basically next door to the Bernardin. And I don't know what else to say about it. He's going to be extremely missed. You know, in the coming days, You know, the only silver lining I would say is how easy it will be to remember him and for how long. You know, go read some of his stuff, go watch some of his shows, go listen to some Ramones music. I had this haunting moment yesterday for no reason. I rarely listen to them. I was listening to the Ramones on my headphones walking around New York all day yesterday. Tony was a big fan of the Ramones. And this morning that freaked me out. I don't really believe in those kind of things, but it was freaky. Anyway, however you do it, remember him, mourn him. It's a loss. It's a cliche. People say all these people are online today. Oh, the industry got smaller. The world got less interesting. Yeah. I really feel that.
No, I know.
He was one of the most massive personalities about, like, in the and not just in food.
When you talk about, like, you know, like you said, there's things we may have disagreed with him or agreed with him, but you know, he always made it interesting.
Always. All right. Tony Bourdain, rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
And thank you for everything you did, not just for people in both of our industries.
Yeah.
But for people around the world with all kinds of needs and concerns, you were amazing.